Purple.com, sleep better for less. Number one in customer satisfaction 2 years in a row with Mattresses Online by J.D. Power Award. Pick the right mattress for you. The Purple Mattress Dual Layered Comfort Foam, Purple Hybrid Breathable Responsive Support, Purple Hybrid Premier, less pressure for dreamy floaty. The Ascent Adjustable Base to make it possible to work, read, and lounge in bed. Bundle up for big savings, 10% off premium bedding and cushion bundles, kids mattresses ultimately placed grid and softer form, best support for little sleepers. Enjoy no pressure support with free sheets and two pillows on select mattress purchase up to $247 value. Sleepy Jones or Purple Pajamas all day comfort with soft stretch and smart pajamas while you worry about breakfast. Some of the products are Purple Harmony Pillow, Double Seat Cushion, Purple and Gravity Weighted Blanket, Purple Duvet, Choose Purple for No Pressure Support. For everybody, 30 plus years and 35 patents, Comfort Gel Grid, technology originally created to make wheelchairs more comfortable than they remember beds. People love Purple, period. Pause PAWS. Typically comfy even for your fur baby. Good morning. Today's Florida story is Eleanor Roosevelt, Part 2. Public life before the White House. In the 1920 presidential election, Franklin was nominated as the running mate of Democratic presidential candidate James M. Cox. Roosevelt joined Franklin in touring the country, making her first campaign appearances. Cox was defeated by Republican Warren G. Harding, who won with 404 electoral votes to 127. Following the onset of Franklin's paralytic illness in 1921, Roosevelt began serving as a stand-in for her incapacitated husband, making public appearances on his behalf, often carefully coached by Lewis Howe. She also started working with the Women's Trade Union League, WTUL, raising funds in support of the union's goals, a 48-hour work week, minimum wage, and the abolition of child labor throughout the 1920s. Roosevelt became increasingly influential as a leader in the New York State Democratic Party, while Franklin used her contacts among Democratic women to strengthen his standing with them, winning their committed support for the future. In 1924, she campaigned for Democrat Alfred E. Smith in a successful re-election bid as governor of New York State against the Republican committee. And her first cousin, Theodore Roosevelt Jr. Franklin, had spoken out on Theodore's wretched record as assistant of Secretary of the Navy during the Teapot Dome scandal and returned. Therefore, Theodore said of him, "He's a maverick. He does not wear the brand of our family," which infuriated her. She dug Theodore on the New York State campaign trail in a car fitted with a papier-mâché bonnet shaped like a giant teapot that was made to emit simulated steam to remind voters of Theodore's supposed but later disapproved connections to the scandal, and countered his speeches with those of her own, calling him immature. She would later decry these methods, admitting that they were below her dignity, but saying that they had been contrived by Democratic Party dirty tricksters. Therefore, Theodore was defeated by 105,000 votes, and he never forgave her. By 1928, Roosevelt was promoting Smith's candidacy for president and Franklin's nomination as a Democratic Party's candidate for governor of New York, succeeding Smith. Although Smith lost the presidential race, Franklin won, and the Roosevelts moved into the governor's mansion in Albany, New York. During Franklin's term as governor, Roosevelt traveled widely in the state to make speeches and inspect state facilities on his behalf, reporting in finance to him at the end of each trip. In 1927, she joined friends Marion Dickerman and Nancy Cook in buying the Todd Hunter School for Girls, a finishing school which also offered college preparatory courses in New York City. At the school, Roosevelt taught upper-level courses in American literature and history, emphasizing independent thought, current events, and social engagement. She continued to teach 3 days a week while FDR served as governor, but was forced to leave teaching after his re-election as president. Also in 1927, she established Bell Kill Industries with Cook Dickerman and Carolyn O'Day, three friends she met through her activities in the Women's Division of the New York State Democratic Party. It was located on the banks of a stream that flowed through the Roosevelt family estate in Hyde Park, New York. Roosevelt and her business partners financed the construction of a small factory to provide supplemental income for its local farming families, who would make furniture, pewter, and homespun cloth using traditional craft methods, capitalizing on the popularity of the colonial revival. Most Bell Kill products were modeled on 18th century farms. Roosevelt promoted Bell Kill through interviews and public appearances. Bell Kill Industries never became the subsistence slogan that the program and the president imagined, but it did pave the way for larger New Deal initiatives during Franklin's presidential administration. Cook's failing health and pressures from the Great Depression compelled the Whip to dissolve the partnership in 1938, at which time Roosevelt converted the shop building into a cottage for Bell Kill, which eventually became her permanent residence after Franklin died in 1945. Otto Burge acquired the contents of the factory and the use of the Bell Kill name to continue making colonial style furniture and until he retired in 1975. In 1977, Roosevelt's cottage at Bell Kill and a surrounding property at 181 acres, 0.73 Columbus Square, was formally designated by an act of Congress as the Eleanor Roosevelt National Historic Site to commemorate for the education, inspiration, and benefit of present and future generations the life and work of an outstanding woman in American history. First Lady of the United States, 1933 to 1945. Roosevelt became First Lady of the United States when Franklin was inaugurated on March 4, 1933. Having known all the 20th century previous First Ladies, she was seriously depressed at having to assume the role, which had traditionally been restricted to domesticity and hostessing. Her immediate predecessor, Lew Henry Hoover, had ended her feminist activism on becoming First Lady, stating her intention to be only a backdrop for Bertie. Eleanor's distress at these precedents were severe enough that Hickok subtitled her biography of Roosevelt, the Reluctant First Lady. With support from Howe and Hickok, Roosevelt sought to redefine the position. According to her biographer, Blanche Weeson Cook, she became the most controversial First Lady in United States history. In the process, despite criticism of them both, with her husband's strong support, she continued with the active business and speaking agenda she had begun before assuming the role of First Lady in an era when few married women had careers. She was the first presidential spouse to hold regular press conferences, and in 1940 became the first to speak at a National Party convention. She also wrote a daily and widely syndicated newspaper called My Day, another first for a presidential spouse. She was also the first lady to write a monthly magazine column and to host a weekly radio show. In the first year of her husband's administration, Roosevelt was determined to match his presidential salary, and she earned $75,000 from her lectures and writing, most of which she gave to charity. By 1941, she was receiving lecture fees of $1,000 and was made an honorary member of Phi Beta Kappa at one of her lectures to celebrate her achievements. Roosevelt maintained a heavy travel schedule in her 12 years at the White House, frequently making personal appearances at labor meetings to assure Depression-era workers that the White House was mindful of their plight. In the one famous cartoon at the time from the New Yorker magazine, June 3, 1933, satirizing a visit she had made to a mine, an astonished coal miner peering down a dark tunnel says to a co-worker, "For gosh sakes, here comes Mrs. Roosevelt." In early 1933, the Bonus Army, a protest group of World War I veterans, marched on Washington for the second time in 2 years, calling for their veteran bonus service to be awarded early. The previous year, President Hoover had ordered them dispersed, and the U.S. Army cavalry charged and bombarded the veterans with tear gas. This time, Roosevelt visits the veterans at their muddy campsite, listening to their conservatives singing army songs with them. The meeting diffused the tension between the between the veterans and the administration, and one of the marchers later commented, "Hoover sent the army, President Roosevelt sent his wife." In 1933, she became First Lady. A new hybrid tea, Rose, was named after her Rose ex-hybrided, Mrs. Franklin D. Roosevelt. In 1937, she began writing her autobiography, all volumes of which were compiled into the autobiography of Eleanor Roosevelt. In 1961, Harper and Brothers, ISBN 0306-80476-X. Since 1982, the Siena College Research Institute has periodically conducted surveys as a tool to assess American First Ladies according to the cumulative score on the independent criteria of their background, intelligence, value to the country, meaning their own women, integrity, accomplishments, courage, leadership, public image, and value to the President. Roosevelt has been ranked by participating historians as the best regarded First Lady in each of the five such surveys to be conducted. In the 2003 survey, Roosevelt was ranked the highest in 9 of the 10 criteria: background, value to the country, intelligence, being her own woman, integrity, accomplishments, courage, leadership, and value to the President. She was ranked the second highest in the remaining category of public image, behind only Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. In the 2008 survey, Roosevelt placed first in 8 of the 10 criteria: intelligence, courage, value to the country, being her own woman, integrity, accomplishments, value to the President, and leadership, and second in the 2 remaining categories, behind only Jacqueline Kennedy. In additional questions included in the 2014 survey, Roosevelt was assessed by stories as having been the greatest among 20th and 21st century first ladies in regards to advancing women's issues. Being a political asset, being a strong public communicator, public service performed after leaving office, and creating a lasting legacy. She was also found to be the second easiest first lady for her service to imagine serving as president herself in the 2014 survey. Roosevelt and her husband were ranked the highest among first couples in terms of being a power couple. American Youth Congress and National Youth Administration. The American Youth Congress, AYC, was formed in 1935 to advocate for youth rights in U.S. politics, and it was responsible for introducing the American Youth Bill of Rights to the U.S. Congress. Roosevelt's relationship with the AYC eventually led to the formation of the National Youth Administration, a New Deal agency in the United States, founded in 1935, that focused on providing work and education for Americans between the ages of 16 and 25. The NYA was headed by Aubrey Willis Williams, a prominent liberal from Alabama, who was close to Roosevelt and Harry Hopkins. Speaking of the NYA in the 1930s, Roosevelt expressed her concern about ageism, stating that, "I live in real terror when I think we may be losing this generation. We have got to bring these young people into the active life of the community and make them feel that they are necessary." In 1939, the Dyess Committee subpoenaed leaders of the AYC, who, in addition to serving AYC, also were members of the Youth Communist League. Roosevelt was in attendance at the hearings and afterward invited the subpoenaed witnesses to board at the White House during their stay in Washington, D.C. Joseph P. Lash was one of their boarders. On February 10, 1940, members of the AYC, as guests of the Roosevelt and her capacity of First Lady, attended a picnic on the White House lawn, where they were addressed by Franklin from the South Portico. The President admonished them to condemn not merely the Nazi regime, but all dictatorships. The President was reportedly booed by the group. Afterwards, many of the same youth picketed the White House, and representatives of the American Peace Mobilization. Among them was Joseph Cadden, one of Roosevelt's overnight boarders. Later in 1940, despite Roosevelt's publication of her "Reasons Why I Still Believe in the Youth Congress," the American Youth Congress was disbanded. The NYA was shut down in 1943. Arthur Dale. Roosevelt's chief project during her husband's first 2 terms was the settlement of a plant community in Arthurdale, West Virginia, on August 18, 1933, at Hickox Urging. Roosevelt visited the families of homeless miners in Morganstown, West Virginia, who had been blacklisted following union activities. Deeply affected by the visit, Roosevelt proposed a resettlement community for the miners at Arthurdale, where they could make a living by subsistence farming, handicrafts, and a local manufacturing plant. She hoped the project could become a model for a new kind of community in the U.S. in which workers would be better cared for. Her husband enthusiastically supported the project. After an initial disastrous experiment with prefab houses, construction began again in 1934 to Roosevelt's specification, this time with every modern convenience including indoor plumbing and central steam heat. Families occupied the first 50 homes in June and agreed to repay the government in 30 years' time, though Roosevelt had hoped for a racially mixed community. The miners insisted on limiting membership to white Christians after losing a community vote. Roosevelt recommended the creation of the other communities for the excluded black and Jewish miners. The experience motivated Roosevelt to become much more outspoken on their issue of racial discrimination. Roosevelt remained a vigorous fundraiser for the community for several years, as well as spending most of her own income on the project. However, the project was criticized by both the political left and right. Conservatives condemned it as a socialist and a communist plot, while Democrat members of Congress opposed government competition with private enterprise. Secretary of the Interior Harold Ickes also opposed the project, citing its high per family cost. Arthurdale continued to sink as a government spending priority for the federal government until 1941, when the U.S. sold off the last of its holdings in the community at a loss. Later, commenters then described the Arthurdale experiment as a failure. Roosevelt herself was sharply discouraged by a 1940 visit in which she left the town and had become excessively dependent on outside assistance. However, the residents considered the town a utopia compared to their previous circumstances, and many were returned to economic self-sufficiency. Roosevelt personally considered the project a success, later speaking of the improvement she saw in people's lives there and stating, "I don't know whether you think that is worth $500,000, but I do." Civil rights activism. Roosevelt seen by historians as having been significantly more advanced than her husband on civil rights. During Franklin's administration, Roosevelt became an important connection to the African-American population in the era of segregation. Despite the president's desire to placate Southern sentiment, Roosevelt was vocal in her support of the civil rights movement. After her experience with Arthurdale and her inspection of New Deal progress in Southern states, she concluded that the New Deal progress were discriminating against African-Americans who received a disproportionately small share of relief money. Roosevelt became one of the only voices in her husband's administration insisting that benefits be equally extended to Americans of all races. Roosevelt also broke with tradition by inviting hundreds of African-American guests to the White House. In 1936, she became aware of conditions at the National Training School for Girls, a predominantly black reform school located in the Palisades neighborhood of Washington, D.C. She visited the school, wrote about it in her My Day column, lobbied for additional funding, and pressed for changes in staffing and curriculum. Her White House invitation to the students became an issue in Franklin's 1936 re-election campaign when the black singer Marian Anderson was denied the use of Washington's Constitutional Hall by the Daughters of the American Revolution in 1939. Roosevelt resigned from the group as in protest and helped rearrange another concert on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. Roosevelt later presented Anderson to the King and Queen of the United Kingdom after Anderson performed at a White House dinner. Roosevelt also arranged the appointment of African-American educator Mary McLeod Bethune, with whom she had struck up a friendship, as directed the Division of Negro Affairs of the National Youth Administration. To avoid problems with the staff when Bethune would visit the White House, Roosevelt would meet her at the gate, embrace her, and walk in with her arm in arm. She was also involved by being the eyes and the ears of the New Deal. She looked to the future and was committed to social reform. One of those programs helped working women receive better wages. The New Deal also placed women in less machine work and more white-collar work. Women did not have to work in the factories making war supplies because men be coming home. Men were coming home so they could take over the long days and nights women had been working to contribute to the war efforts. Roosevelt brought unprecedented access and ability to the role of the First Lady. In contrast to her usual support of African-American rights, the sundown town Eleanor in West Virginia was named for her and was established in 1934 when she and Franklin visited the county and developed it as a test site for families. As a sundown town like other Franklin Roosevelt towns around the nation, such as Greenbelt, Green Hills, Greendale, Hanford, or North, it was for whites only. It was established as a New Deal project. Roosevelt lobbied behind the scenes for the 1934 Costigan-Wagner bill to make lynching a federal crime, including arranging a meeting between Franklin and NAACP President Walter Francis White, fearing he could lose the votes of Southern and congressional delegations for his legislative agenda. However, Franklin refused to publicly support the bill, which proved unable to pass the Senate in 1942. Roosevelt worked with activist Pauli Murray to persuade Franklin to appeal on behalf of sharecropper Odell Waller, convicted of killing a white farmer during a fight though Franklin sent a letter to Virginia Governor Colgate. Governor Colgate Darden, urging him to commute the sentence of to life imprisonment, Waller was executed as scheduled. Roosevelt's support of African-American rights made her an unpopular figure among whites in the South. Rumors spread of Eleanor clubs formed by servants to oppose their employers and Eleanor Tuesdays, on which African-American men would knock down white women on the street, though no evidence has ever been found of either practice. When race riots broke out in Detroit in June 1943, critics in both the North and South wrote that Roosevelt was to blame. At the same time, she grew so popular among African Americans, previously a reliable public Republican voting bloc, which they became a consistent base of support for the Democratic Party. Following the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941, Roosevelt spoke out against Japanese-American prejudice, warning against the great hysteria against minority groups. She also privately opposed her husband's executive order 9066, which required Japanese Americans in many areas of the U.S. to enter internment camps. She was widely criticized for her defense of Japanese American citizens, including a call by the Los Angeles Times that she be forced to retire from public life over her stand on the issue. Thank you for listening to the second part of First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt. Stay tuned next week for the last episode of First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt. Have a good week and stay safe.